Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. Dave Sarakin announced the roster for the Memorial Day friendly with Bolivia, and it's young, average age under 23, and it includes 7 uncapped players and 2 who haven't played any first-team football. It appears we'll have a heavy demarcation between the roster for Bolivia and the roster for Ireland and France. Something like 10 people will be replaced. We've already exhaustively cataloged our thoughts on this podcast on who should be called up for these friendlies, so we won't go into that again. For now, let's talk about how the program can get the most out of this game against Bolivia on Monday. What's the goal, Greg?
The goal's the same every time out. We want to connect some passes and we want to score some bangers. No, the goal's the same, I think, as what I wanted to see at least against Paraguay, which is a sort of brave playing style where guys are really trying to solve problems with their movement and with a little bit of possession. You know, ideally, we build on what we had against Paraguay and add sort of the same kind of problem solving, but farther up the field where potentially we see some more creativity in and around the box, as they like to say. So that's what I want. I want to see that. I think we will see that, to be quite frank, in this game.
I'll ask you what gives you that optimism, but I'll give one point just of context that gives me a little bit of optimism about that, which is that Bolivia is bringing a very weak squad. 14 uncapped players, 20 of the 26 guys on the roster are playing in the Bolivian League. Only 2 in Europe, and they're in Greece and the Ukraine. Only 70 caps on the roster in total compared to our 106, and everybody's talking about how inexperienced our roster is. Does that mean we can experiment even more, do you think?
All of these rosters for the last 3 friendlies for the U.S. have been experimental. When you say the average age is under 23, and given how old we were as a national team through the last cycle, I think every one of these rosters has to be sort of qualified as experimental. That doesn't mean that our current experimental squads are almost as good as our hex squad was in October.
Yeah, it's funny that we have this experimental squad that has, you know, arguably the 3 best players in the pool on it in Pulisic, McKennie, and Miazga.
Right. So I think you're spot on with Bolivia being what I would sort of consider this January caliber opponent, but our young squad actually being, these aren't unknown young kids for the most part. We've got big pieces of the core of the team for the next cycle or two. So I do think that when you bring in a Christian Pulisic and a Weston McKennie, you add them in. I know we sort of lose Tyler Adams from the last group. There are a lot of guys who are missing from the Paraguay game that were very strong. But I think McKennie and Pulisic are reason enough for optimism given the weakness of the opponent.
After the Paraguay match, we talked sort of at length about whether Sarakin had done a good job in his decisions. And I think we basically came to the conclusion that we mostly approved of what he did. And the reason was, which you explained a lot better than I can, is there was a sense in which you could evaluate a couple of players in a context that was semi-realistic, like surrounded with quality and or experience enough that it wasn't like we didn't have 4 new faces on the back line, so then maybe it falls apart and we don't know how anybody, we can't really evaluate anybody there because it was just so chaotic. Instead of that, we had sort of some controls in place, some, if we want to use a scientific method here, experimental controls. With that in mind, how many players do you think we can evaluate at one time in one of these friendlies, and specifically in this friendly? Like, how many of the 11 roster spots have to be a control, a known quantity, so that we can get a useful evaluation of the unknown quantities? You know, how many of each do we need? Does that make sense?
I think you essentially want is you want anchors in each line. So in the back line, I think at this point, because we were able to see Miazga and like Cameron Carter-Vickers do really well with Villafania and Yedlin next to them, I think we can now move on and say, okay, Miazga and Cameron Carter-Vickers now can set a baseline if we want to see an Anthony Robinson in the back line. If that's the goal, is to get a meaningful evaluation of like an Anthony Robinson. So I think you could do something like that, where Viafania is probably, you probably know he's a better option, that he might be ahead of Robinson, but you can get a good evaluation of Robinson next to now Miazga and CCV.
Right. So can you do that with both fullbacks, or can you only do it with one fullback at a time?
So I think you could try to pull it off with both fullbacks. Frankly, I don't think you, basically because one fullback doesn't affect the other that much. If Robinson's getting just torched around the edge, you're not going to say, oh, well, it's because the right back was, you know, out of position. So I think you could do it with both. I don't know that we will, because I feel like Olasunde is such a long shot. That feels very Kakuta Mane-ish to bring in Olasunde. Like, this isn't a FIFA date, and we didn't want to pull any MLS guys. And so we literally just didn't have enough bodies that we could bring in a right back. I'm guessing Yedlin either just wasn't cleared or just preferred not to come back for this match. So I imagine we'll see Lehigh, who's a known commodity. I think this is a great chance to give Robinson 90 minutes at fullback on the left side.
I totally agree. That's what I hope happens, and I assume Lehigh will start. Olasunde is kind of a head-scratcher a little bit, because you think Shaq Moore would be available. Yedlin's not playing right now. He'll probably join in Europe. I'm not sure what's going on with Olasunde. Maybe they know something about his future over these next few months that we don't know.
And this too is where I'd love to get some insight. Yeah, sort of have some of that inside baseball where, you know, Newcastle might almost just chuckle at the idea of the U.S. coming and asking for DeAndre Yedlin after he puts in 30-odd games in a row, I think, once he came back from injury. Like, they're just like, no, you'll get him when on a FIFA date. You're not just going to pull him in for this extra camp. Like, the guy's going to have an off season.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that goes on or if it was just the U.S. just chose to, again, give Olasunde, put him in the shop window.
Right. Yeah.
Presumably, he won't be starting for Manchester United next year.
Yeah. I've seen only a little bit of footage of him, and he does look good. He does look, he looks extremely athletic and a lot cleaner on the ball than you might expect given his sort of career status at the moment. But I don't expect to see him, and I would rather we give Robinson the test.
Yeah, that's your backline test. I think the midfield, it gets there are so many moving pieces for the midfield.
Yeah.
And certainly unknowns from a sort of our fans' perspective without knowing what Sarakin's thinking. But I think it's reasonable to assume that like Keaton Parks could be getting a real test here.
That's my hope. But maybe before we jump into that, we should talk about the biggest moving piece, which is Christian Mate Pulisic.
Yes.
It seems to be a widespread view that he should be in the 10. I feel like you and I have exhaustively covered this topic, but
let's... Yeah, my position's pretty well documented that his best position is on the wing. I don't think he has the qualities that you want in a number 10. I think you can make a real argument for him as sort of an in-the-hole striker, and I think the argument gets stronger when you look at our dearth of options at forward. So you're essentially saying we're going to play like a 4-4-1-1 with Pulisic underneath a more conventional target striker. And I can see that. I know you're going to very adamantly say that he belongs on the wing. but I do see the logic of put your best player in a position where he can most influence the game.
I'm not totally immune to that argument. I just think, and I know we're basically in agreement on this, generally speaking, maybe not with this roster, but with the pool in general and sort of the rising crop of talent, we have so many central midfielders, mostly eights, who are really good at soccer, or at least have the potential to be really good at it. We don't have a lot of wings. If we're going to do that 4-4-1-1, then what you're saying essentially is we're going to drop one of those central midfielders so that we can play Paul Areola or Rubio Rubin or Julian Green or Lyndon Gooch on the wing, And I think faced with that choice, I think most fans and most analysts would say, no, I'd rather start Tyler Adams, Weston McKennie, Keaton Parks, Will Trapp,
Michael Bradley,
eventually Chris Durkin, then maybe even Kellen Acosta at center mid over one of those four wingers that I just mentioned. Timmy Way is another one of the wingers.
Darlington Nagbe as an eight, rather than playing like Darlington Nagbe at a position on the wing and Christian Pulisic in the center of the field.
Right. And that's just like the narrow pragmatic argument. I think there's a larger sort of philosophical one, which is we played give it to Christian Ball in the hex a lot, and it worked sometimes. It worked against Honduras at home, and it worked against Panama at home, but it didn't work a lot of other times. And it just seems kind of pathetic for us to say, oh, well, he's our best player. He's got to be the 10. That just rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah, and there are plenty of counterexamples, too, where teams put their most dynamic attacking threat more towards the wing and then give them license to go wherever they need to be dynamic. And I think that is a much better use of our most dynamic player.
Yeah, he doesn't have a license to drink in the U.S., but give him a license to drift.
Yes. That is a tagline right there. So what are you expecting? I know we both are really hoping to see his name out wide. Sarakin has even been running that 4-1-4-1, which would really, I think, be enhanced. I think it would be a huge upgrade to the threat level with a Pulisic wide rather than a Darlington Nagbe out on the wing. So what are you expecting?
I'm expecting Sarakin to play him as a 10 in some formation. Probably a 4-1-3-1-1 or something like that. The reason I think Sarakin's going to do that is that he didn't bring very many center mids. Keaton Parks, Alejandro Guido, Weston McKennie, and who's the fourth one?
Joe Corona.
Yeah, Joe Corona are the four. And then there's more sort of traditional wingers on the roster. That seems to me an indication that Sarakin wants to play him as a 10. And I don't approve of that, but I assume that's what's going to happen.
I do too. And sort of my worst fear is that Bolivia is going to be so inept that he's going to once again sort of run riot. And that will sort of strengthen everyone's resolve. And Christian Pulisic is our savior in the center of the field. And I feel like you can't keep calling him a 10. Like, you can call him a forward, but calling him a 10 for some reason, for me, on like a pedantic level, like the guy is absolutely not what you think of as a 10.
Right. He's a great dribbler. He's not a great passer. He's a decent passer.
Right. When I hear 10, I think in the U.S. Pool, I'm thinking like Sasha Kljestan and Benny Feilhaber, guys who could pull strings or have that ability to carve open a defense with a pass.
Yeah.
So Pulisic, I could see him playing as a forward, and I could see him having a lot of success this weekend. So let's say Sarakin's going to play Pulisic there, which, you know, fair enough. That still sets up a good test for like a Keaton Parks if he's playing next to McKennie behind Pulisic, right? That's a good place to evaluate Keaton Parks. I mean, if Keaton Parks can succeed, he should be able to succeed in that setup.
I think he would succeed in that setup. I think a better test would be to put Pulisic on the wing, and a better test for everyone would be to put Pulisic on the wing and then put Parks, McKennie, and say Joe Corona in the middle. But
that's exactly what I'd like to see. And I think the test part of that becomes, all right, you have McKennie, Corona, and Parks. We're giving you this extremely dangerous weapon out wide. Are you guys good enough to combine enough to unbalance the defense to spring Pulisic?
Yeah. See, that seems to me like an extremely useful experiment.
Rather than the other way around, which is Parks and McKennie just be pendulums and we'll rely on Pulisic to do everything.
Yep. Yeah, I don't like it. The more we talk about it, the more frustrated I'm getting. My heart rate is increasing.
Well, I guess it's an easier test to pass for a Keaton Parks. And who knows? It's also possible that like a McKennie's job could be to the test could be how well does McKennie or Parks, whoever might be called on in that role or whoever, how well can they join? How well can they sort of a la Michael Bradley either arrive late or just make those runs from deeper in midfield to really provide that numerical advantage.
I threw a lineup on Twitter and I had Parks as the sort of most forward oriented of the three of those midfielders, Parks, McKennie, and Corona, just because he seems to me to have a little bit more attacking third class than McKennie does at the moment. Obviously based on a sample size that's flawed. It's playing in the second division in Portugal, but it seems like he would be good at arriving.
So that's what I'm going to be looking for then from any center midfield pairing that that is playing like behind a Christian Pulisic.
Let's go back to what Sarragen likely will do, which is putting Pulisic on as a second forward or whatever you want to call it. Would you put Parks and McKennie as your two midfielders behind him?
Yes, I think that's for sure what I would do. I don't think Corona is best suited at that point as like a holding safety valve. I mean, he's a good player in possession, so it's not that he couldn't do that. It'd be sort of the Marky Delgado role from the last couple of games. Mm-hmm. But I also kind of think you don't need to use Corona there in the sense of Corona, again, it'd be like starting Ali Bedoya there. You know that Corona's not going to be your answer in 4 years.
Right. He'd be good glue with McKennie and Parks, but right, I agree. Who do you have on your wings? Well, let's sort of talk about both who you would like to see and who we think Sarakin will put out there. Start with who you would like to see.
So in my lineup that I was making for Sarakin, where I have Pulisic in the center of the field, my wings are just a pair of question marks. Like, I don't think that anyone has done anything to distinguish themselves where between Green, Rabin, Weah, Lyndon Gooch, we really wish we would have seen Jonathan Amon, I think. Mm-hmm. I feel like out of anyone, he's done the most in his club scene to sort of demand that. So I could honestly pull two names out of a hat.
Right.
I feel like you could even put Corona's name in that hat. Like, he could get used in that Nagby role.
Yeah, the asymmetrical one.
Yes, the one you love so much.
Yeah, I mean, I more or less agree with you. That's a big part of the reason why, to me, it doesn't make sense to put Pulisic in the middle. There's nobody who demands playing time out there. Nobody who can be depended on to pose a threat from the wing.
But based on sort of the super small performances we saw against Paraguay, I would say it would not surprise me at all to see Tim Weah start out on the left side. Mm-hmm. I thought maybe it was just by chance, but I thought he did more in his cameo than Rabin did. So assuming that they're sort of close, that'd be the one distinguishing factor.
Okay. So Weah on the left wing and just a toss up for the right wing. Let's say Gooch. I mean,
sure. But going back to our framework though, like, that's both of those guys would be getting sort of legitimate tests here. So if you've got if the midfield is solid with Parks and McKennie and Pulisic, and your job is to be threatening on the wing, because I think for those guys that's the job. For Nagby, for other guys it might just be to be a sort of a possession hub. But for the wingers we have, I think on this roster, the job's to be dangerous, right? Rabin's expected to sort of be slashing around and causing problems.
Yeah.
So that's the test for these guys. Are they capable of looking dangerous against a Bolivian domestic squad?
Yeah, that would be a good test. And then we'd have basically, Gooch is sort of a known quantity. He can be a little bit dangerous, and he can hold the ball, and he's strong, and he's energetic. He's not going to create a ton. Weah is obviously an unknown, I think, to a large extent at this point. If we play, you know, Weah out there on the wing, then we're having a test for the winger and a test for the striker, because whether it's Sargent or Novakovic, it's going to be a test. They're both unknown at this point.
Right, and they've got a really high bar to pass given Bobby Wood's performance against Paraguay, so you've got to really... You're going to have to impress. But no, that's sort of the thing. So Gooch has like maybe a little bit lower expectations on the danger level than Weah. If Weah starts in this game against a weak Bolivia team and has a solid midfield like playing, like a McKennie and Pulisic again is potentially two of our best players. If Weah can't be dangerous there, then you really have to be like, okay, Weah might not be ready.
Yeah, that would probably be useful. I mean, he's got to become a regular player for somewhere. His club. Yeah. In any case.
Well, you do and you don't. Like, Altidor went a year and a half without playing it in for his Spanish club. With U.S. attackers, like, you can earn your minutes at the U.S. camp. They don't always have to come with your club. And I kind of agree with that reasoning, to be quite frank. Like, there's that line going around right now that Weah hasn't earned this call-up, and so people are a little frustrated with Weah and Olasunde getting called up because they have
and
zero.
Sargent,
yeah, actually more Sargent than the other two. I don't necessarily agree with that. So you'd rather pick a mediocre placeholder, like, because they've somehow earned it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't buy it either. I mean, I get the point. I don't agree that they shouldn't be called up. And it goes back to something we've discussed in the past with Wes McKennie. He was in the plans for Schalke throughout the summer. The summer ended. They offloaded a bunch of veterans on loan or sold them. McKennie was in the plans. He was playing from the get in the Bundesliga and in the DFB Pokal. Anybody who's paying attention would have noticed the significance of that. And I think we're not quite as far along with Sargent, but we know, based on something the coach said last week, that they're not going to buy any new strikers this summer at Werder Bremen. He mentioned Sargent specifically by name as somebody who can step in this fall. So, I mean, to me, that's like a strong signal that Sargent's in the plans at Bremen, a mid-table Bundesliga side. I'm totally cool with him getting called up. And I think he should start up top. I don't feel super strongly about it, but I would rather see him start than Novakovic based on the small sample we got of Novakovic in the Paraguay game.
Yeah, I agree completely. And a lot of that goes to Novakovic isn't like somehow he's not secret. Like, any team has been able to watch him play for Telstar. And if they decided that his goal-scoring run was a real indicator of his quality, I'm sure they could be getting him on the cheap. It's not like Bundesliga teams are knocking down the door to pick him up.
Right. I guess we've sort of settled our lineup. Like I said earlier, I would rather Pulisic be on the wing and then maybe a Gooch on the left side. The argument I'd make for that is Gooch could help cover for Anthony Robinson, who might need a little bit of cover. Might not, but might. And then Sargent up top and a midfield of McKennie, Parks, and Corona. I don't think that's going to happen. I think we'll get the Sarakin Pulisic central attacking role version of the lineup. And then, you know, in my world, bring in Alejandro Guido. He's a nice player in possession. He's not a regular starter or even always in the 18 for Tijuana, but wouldn't mind seeing him for a little while. If Robinson really struggles, bring in Viafania, or maybe bring Lehigh over to the left and put Olasunde in at right back. And then, of course, give Rubin, Weah, and Green, and Novakovic a run out if he can. I think we'd be in business.
I won't lose any sleep if, like, four of those guys don't get on the field at all. If they can't show it, sort of a thing, then because of sort of the giant net we're casting right now with this friendly and then 10 more guys coming in, like, if Rubin can't beat out these three guys, then you can sort of just say he's not going to be in the picture, and he doesn't need a 10-minute cameo for us to know that.
Yeah, that's fair.
Rubin might be the wrong example, but for like a Green or a Olasunde, like, I don't care if they don't get on the field at all. Like, we're stretching so far that a lot of these guys who are reaches, it might be apparent that they don't really have a place.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. That's a better take than mine. I'm just trying to be all things to all people, you know?
Yeah. Well, no, it's because I want the minutes to go to the guys who legitimately are, like, going to be competing for these spots. So I don't want Keaton Parks to lose out on even 20 minutes if you're just sort of throwing Alejandro Guido a bone. Like, I don't know if Guido's going to be really far behind, then there's no need to see it. Or vice versa, if Parks just looks completely out of sorts after 2 days of training,
give it to
that's
Guido.
Fine. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. The game is Monday at 6 o'clock. I think we're going to hopefully record a podcast after the game. Any other thoughts before we move on to short corners?
Yeah, I mean, this is exciting. It's great to get, like, you've been waiting forever for McKennie and Pulisic. Like, this is a real exciting, meaningless game.
Yeah, we should step back and make a note of that for sure.
Because everyone's gonna be kind of like, oh, ho-hum, like another terrible friendly, like what's the point? There's no coach, there's no technical director. And I don't care that there's no coach. Like, it's Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie playing on the field together.
Yeah.
Whoever the coach is going to be playing Christian Pulisic and Weston McKennie on the field together.
That
hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, that's true. And like we said last week, they've never played together ever at any level. So, and they're buddies. They live in the same, basically in the same town in Germany. And Keaton Parks is somebody we've all been clamoring for many months. So that's a really exciting possibility. And I think Josh Sargent is also, if he gets to start, that'll be just fascinating to see how he does.
Right. I have no expectations, but I'm really excited to see what he does, whether he falls on his face completely, which would be unfortunate, or whether he looks incredibly comfortable. Like, let's see what the kid can do.
Yeah. He's a good, I mean, what we know from the U20 and U17 World Cups, more the U20 World Cup than the U17 one, is that he's a lot better in hold up play than your typical 18-year-old. And he's he hits the ball hard on frame when he gets a little window. Question is, how quickly are those windows gonna collapse for him at this level, and can he deal with that, the speed of play? I think Sarakin even said as much when he talked about that call up. So that'll be fun to watch. The dream sequence is McKennie plays a slicing ball out wide to Pulisic. Pulisic, you know, beats a guy and then hits a near post cross to Sargent, who just comes in and roofs it.
Those are the connected passes and bangers I was talking about.
Let's move on unless we got any. You got it. Let me give one more opportunity, Greg. Anything else?
No, man. Let's get to this game.
Okay. We'll be right back. Okay, short corners, our weekly segment of odds and ends. The first one is Efren Alvarez, the 15-year-old youth Mexican national who a year and a half ago was playing for the U.S. There's some kind of backstory on why he left the U.S. setup. I don't know. I don't understand it, and nobody's talking about it. But he's the best teenager in USL. In the United Soccer League, he's scored 6 goals in the last 3 games, and they've, speaking of bangers, they've been bangers. Almost all of them have been like ropes from distance or, you know, curlers from the edge of the box. He just looks like a next level talent. The news here is he told Univision in a very nice profile that's online that you can find. I think the direct quote is, "I keep doors open. Nobody from the USSF has contacted me, but I'm always willing to talk and see things." And, you know, I don't want to blow it out of proportion, but Carlos Cordero should fly to his house right now. Immediately.
I feel like there's just so much wrapped up in that quote of good and bad, like the hint that there's a possibility, but then also the incredibly terrible reality that of course no one from U.S. soccer has contacted him.
Yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, we're never going to know what's going on here, right? Like, is it that they just assume he's a lost cause so they don't waste their time? Is it that they're proud and don't want to, like, grovel for a 15-year-old?
Is it that that job doesn't exist in U.S. soccer? Like, there is no one person whose job description includes, like, contacting these dual nationals?
Yeah.
Keeping just maintaining a relationship, keeping connections open. Like, are we the ones who ignore open doors?
Maybe. I don't know. Ty Ramos knows who this kid is. He knows how good he is. You'd think he'd be, like, really attuned to it. I mean, he fits into the U-20 team right now. He's better than Andrew Carlton.
Well,
I don't understand it.
So they're not doing great at recruiting dual nationals, but hopefully they've got their act together everywhere else, U.S. soccer. I'm sure the rest of the organization is just very coherent.
Yeah. It's a fascinating situation at the LA Galaxy because they have Alvarez and then they have two U.S. youth internationals, Ulysses Yanez, who we've talked about, and Alex Mendez, who I think we've talked about a little bit, a winger and an eight. Alvarez is more of a 10. There's a lot of talent on that Los Angeles Galaxy 2 side. Hopefully Yanez and Mendez can speak to Alvarez and convince him to come over to the U.S. again and not vice versa. I guess there's not much else.
Yeah, open door works both ways, doesn't it?
It sure does. Yeah, and the door seems to be it's like a one-way valve at this point. I don't know if you saw this, but I was struck by the Peter Vermes interview with Soccer America, a publication that's done a lot of good work over the last year or so. It's broken a lot of the big news. But Vermes essentially said there's no plan. He was interviewed for the coaching job. He said there's no plan at USSF. So speaking of everything else at the Federation going well, it's not, Greg. Maybe it's not.
You think it might not be? So since our World Cup disaster, USSF's major steps have been to elect the vice president as the new president and to appoint the assistant manager as the interim manager. I think those are the two major steps that U.S. soccer's taken.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'll just acknowledge, my view is there's a lot of nuance with Cordero. I think he was obviously he was the second in command at the Fed, but he makes a strong case that he was he had a different view of things than Sunil. But that being said, the bald facts are clear. He was the second in command, and here we are. The one excuse I'll give them is they've got to lock down this World Cup bid. And I think they've been spending a lot of their energy and time on that, which seems wise. There's a clear deadline coming up in 2.5 weeks for a decision on that. So I'm cool with that. But boy, oh boy, after that, we got to start seeing some things move around, or the natives are going to get restless.
Yeah, so we're really looking for his direction. And so I think Peter Vermes's comments, again, just lower any expectations you have for USSF to pull out of the tailspin. I don't know if we even want that direction to be coming from the new president, or if we want the new general manager to be providing it. What's sort of your take on that? Like, or is this more of just chicken and egg, and Peter Vermes would actually be the guy who would be giving us that direction?
My take is, yeah, we want the general manager to set the direction. We should mention, for those who are not obsessed with this stuff, Vermes is the coach of Sporting KC,
sure,
successful successful coach, and he's also the technical director. He's sort of in charge of their whole program.
Yeah, and he's like really deeply involved. Like, he knows the literal depth chart from the starting players on Sporting KC down to like their youth 13 academy team. So he knows where everyone fits.
He seems like a very detail oriented and competent guy, and he's got SKC on a real good trajectory so far this season. Yeah, my take is the general manager should be the one setting direction. What frustrates me about what we know about the job description is that it doesn't include oversight of the youth teams, the youth national teams. So that just doesn't make any sense to me. Why would you have a general manager solely in charge of the national team with like a separate sort of siloed hierarchy around the youth national teams? Don't make no sense, man.
It's almost like the entire position was created just to ease the tension surrounding the fan base and the team. You would almost think that that's the case.
Yeah, I don't like to be that cynical, but maybe it's some combination of that and just an unwillingness to sort of rock the boat. So Tab Ramos is like, hey, man, do whatever you want, but I'm still going to be in charge of the youth national teams. And then Dan Flynn is like, okay, Tab, sounds good.
Right, and so then when you're interviewing a Peter Vermees type, who would expect to be running, if he's going to be the technical director, to be running from top to bottom, that, of course, is going to sound like a complete disaster to him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Vermees is, you know, he's not some guy who's been just like shooting off at the mouth about it, which is, I think, what gives that interview extra weight. If you haven't used up your one free article on SoccerAmerica.com for the month, I highly recommend you check that one out.
And then if you really enjoy it, go ahead and subscribe to Soccer America.
Yeah, no, I should say that too. Meanwhile, also subscribe to our podcast. Tyler Adams, we've got two little bits of news on him. One, he is reportedly headed to Red Bull Leipzig in the winter. And then he could go on loan. Maybe. We don't know where to. So, well, let's take that one first. It seems to me like this is kind of what we all already suspected. But I guess it's good to have it confirmed that he's going to Leipzig anonymously.
We've all been kind of been hoping that he... Essentially, his play is recognized as worth sort of a big money transfer. I don't remember if there was any. There were no dollar amounts attached to that, were there?
No, there were not. It would be an in-house deal.
Kind of, right?
Might come with a head coach thrown in for a good measure too.
So Jesse Marsh is also rumored to be in contention for that position, right?
Yes.
Or was he for Leipzig or was he for Salzburg?
No, the rumor was Leipzig. This stuff is all very, you know, it's all anonymous sources and cloak and dagger. So who really knows? But that's the rumor, is that Marsh is headed to Leipzig too. The real question for me is, if Adams goes to Leipzig, will he break into the 18? And if not, where does he go on loan? Because that's what really matters. I mean, I feel like if he goes to Bundesliga for the year, that'll be a real signal that he's been pretty significantly overhyped, in my opinion, and needs quite a bit of seasoning before he's this like lock central midfielder that everybody believes he is for the national team.
Because at this stage in his career, this isn't Weston McKennie spending a year in like a reserve team at age 17. Like, Tyler Adams is now... This will be his second, like, full-blown first-team season. He should be essentially a product that's ready to step in and play, right?
You'd think so. I mean, Leipzig's a good team, though, you know? I mean, is Adams as good as McKennie? I don't think so. And, you know, Leipzig is roughly on the same level as Schalke, and McKennie sometimes has, you know, he's had his moments of struggle with Schalke. So, I don't know. And then there's always the possibility they convert him into a right back, which I think he would be ready for tomorrow.
Right. No, I get you. I just wonder if, like, what would Leipzig, how would they be served to make this move on him if they're trying to develop him? That it seems like they'd be either pulling him in as a right back or it's some kind of just a financial, like you said, behind the scenes, all one organization, just moving money around.
Yeah, I mean, it would be good for Red Bull Leipzig's brand to have him on the squad. You know, they would get more American fans immediately. I don't know how much of a consideration that is for front offices in the Bundesliga, but it's not a consideration. Anyway, I guess we've acknowledged that news. The other thing that happens with Adams is he came off of the Atlanta United match, which the Red Bulls won 3-1 in impressive fashion. It was a great game. He came off with some kind of knee injury, which we haven't gotten an update on, right?
Nothing I've seen, no.
He looked really upset. That's a big part of the reason I watched the replays. I wanted to see, you know, what it looked like, and he looked really upset. Did you notice that?
So what I couldn't tell was because simultaneously Kamar Lawrence was down in a really serious incident, and my initial thought was that Tyler Adams was really broken up about the fact that Kamar Lawrence was on the ground not moving.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
But I saw the other interpretations too from people that no, Tyler Adams was like obviously very concerned about whatever was going on with his knee, so he ended up just being on the bench with the knee pack of ice on his knee. So yeah, I guess we're waiting to hear more from that.
We have gotten an update on Lawrence. Well, go ahead.
No, I was just the update on Lawrence is really good news, or at least it's definitely not bad news, right?
Right. What a weird situation, because he just kind of fell on his knees and then kind of went face first into the turf, and then he didn't move for 10 minutes.
Yeah, just really scary stuff. Made a really like improvisational play on a ball with his chest because it was in an awkward spot, so then couldn't fall like a normal human being and sort of had to fall really awkwardly into the turf while he was playing the ball. So yeah, really, really encouraging updates on him, so that's good.
Yeah. Good to hear that.
The Adams stuff, it would be really bad timing for like a injury that you can't really nail down, right? What is you're trying to potentially sell them?
Yeah, you know, this stuff can be career altering, and I would be upset too. Assuming he was upset about his own knee and not, you know, his teammate being immobile on the field, he probably was a little upset about both.
That'll be one to monitor. With I guess we can kind of assume that he won't be partaking in the friendlies here coming up.
Right. Well, but, I mean, I guess we don't know. Maybe it's just a scare and there's nothing there. I hope that's the case, but his inclusion in the European friendlies does seem to be in doubt. My last point, if you don't have anything else, is Chris Durkin had a very good game, his second very good game in a row at the holding midfielder position for DC United on Saturday against San Jose. And I'd argue he's improving as quickly as any player in the league. He looks, not only does he already have the sort of quality on the ball, the ability to buy himself space with a nifty little touch here or there, and good passing vision and the ability to hit a long diagonal, but now he's becoming kind of a tough, just defensive midfielder. And I still haven't gotten all the work done on it, but I'm going to put some GIFs together over the next couple days to show that. He looked almost N'Golo Kantean. just a little bit slower and whiter.
But, like, the kind of play that you would look like, again, you mentioned it when we were talking about the roster we were hoping to see called up. Like, these are performances that really should be putting him in the discussion, right, for the U.S. team. Like, immediately not a guy for the future, but potentially the guy right now.
I feel like if these friendlies were happening 2 months from now and he kept playing this way for two more months, I'd be banging the pots and pans out in the churchyard. to have him called up. But yeah, it's, you know, it's still early, and they've played, you know, San Jose is pretty much terrible.
Right.
So that's a consideration. And he's got LAFC on Saturday, goes up against Carlos Vela and Diego Rossi and Benny Philhaber. And we'll get a better idea of how he looks, I think, from that game. If he comes out of that with flying colors, then I think we've kind of moved into a new paradigm with him. That's
okay,
my view.
Okay, so if he comes out of that one, like if he just looks as good in that one as he looked in his last one, is it too early then to just add him to these games? I mean, we're already going to be adding a bunch of guys, right? Are those guys already set? Have they all been alerted? Or is Chris Durkin going to elbow his way into the mix?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I mean,
if he shuts down Carlos Vela, that's...
Yeah, that's huge. Then he should be making a one-time switch to Mexico and playing in the World Cup. I mean, you look at the current roster, there are at least three or four, arguably five, maybe even six players who don't have as much on their resume as Durkin at this point. So, I mean, I don't see any reason he should be denied the opportunity on that basis. Although we may have a more experienced, less experimental roster for the two friendlies in Europe, you know?
Perhaps, but I can only think of like 1-6 who would be on that, if assuming that for some reason Michael Bradley still isn't being considered, and that would be Will Trapp, right? Who else is what other six would we be talking about?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess we'll see how Sarakin lines them up on Monday, but maybe McKennie will end up as a six, maybe Parks. I don't know. But you're right. Well, but your point is a good one. We don't have any other pure sixes than Trapp and Bradley. So here comes Durkin.
There you go, Chris Durkin. Fight for that spot.
Yep. Anything else before we sign off?
I'll be really excited about this game, and I'm actually really excited to then get into it right after it's over.
We'll be publishing late Monday, early Tuesday. Cue us up for the commute.
Yeah, we won't be the only ones who are going to be excited about this.
Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. World Cup starts in 3 weeks now, 3.5. And two more friendlies after this one for the U.S. So lots to talk about before we hit the summer doldrums. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for listening, everybody. See ya.